Hi, folks. Galen Clavio here. Welcome back to the Bracket Racket on HoopsHD.com as we talk about college basketball, the week that was and the week that will be here on our, I guess this is probably our second-to-last edition of 2013. Seems like the year's really flown by, but lots to talk about as several games of interest over the past week and some interesting ones coming up here as really we're in the last stretch of the non-conference season. And frankly, with some of the games we've had in the non-conference season, I'm kind of glad about that. Looking forward to the conferences started, and so we're going to talk a little bit about that today as well. We have an abbreviated panel, Lee Delvecchio, unavailable this evening, but we're going to soldier forward. Kyle Lamb joining us, as always. Kyle, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Just trying to control my aggression on Twitter, because I'm about to issue an edict to all the college basketball media never to mention the quality of North Carolina again.
They're a trap. They are the ultimate trap team this year. It's pretty remarkable. We're going to talk about them a lot here over the next hour or so. David Griggs joining us as well. David, you're stationary tonight. Your video feed not working, but how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's interesting Kyle should mention Twitter because, as you know, I took to the Twitter sphere about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I've got some wonderful followers that I always love to give shout-outs to, as I call them, the Twitter escort service. We've got Frija Domichel, we've got Cherry Cothran, Lori Heidman, Renee Sealback, Janice Jammer, all huge college basketball fans, I'm sure, all following me on Twitter. Just a big hello and a big Hoops HD welcome to them.
What can we say, folks? College basketball, it's a uniter. It's not a divider. I mean, that's about the best way I can put it. So glad that all those fine ladies are tuning in this evening. And speaking of Twitter, if you folks would like to get in touch with us, that's probably the easiest way to do it. You can tweet at us at HoopsHD, or you can leave a comment on the YouTube channel that you're watching if you are indeed watching this live. We can put that up on screen. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. Any and all conversation relating to college basketball, lay it on us, folks. We're ready. Anyway, let's trek back, gentlemen, to Wednesday of this week, and let's start talking about some games, some things that happened this week in college basketball. I think first and foremost, Kyle, you mentioned it to start with. Let's go ahead and get on this North Carolina team. North Carolina, of course, had a big win 8 days ago. They knocked off Kentucky 82-77. That was on the heels of their having beaten Michigan State and Louisville. And people are thinking, hey, this North Carolina squad, they're looking pretty good. Then they turn around and they lose to Texas. Yes, that same Texas at home. And then really struggle on Saturday as they almost get knocked off at home by a subpar Davidson squad this year, or at least from a record perspective. North Carolina right now 8-3 on the season and, of course, got some bad news, self-inflicted bad news, as P.J. Hairston will not be rejoining the team for the remainder of his career, so he's just done. So, Kyle, what do we make of this team right now? I mean, they've got maybe two of the three best wins in college basketball at this point, but they've also got some pretty questionable losses, and I have nothing, I don't know what to make of them going into the ACC season at this stage.
Well, let's get one thing clear. Let's just put this right out in the open. And if you're listening, Seth Davis, if you're listening, Matt Norlander, if you're listening, Gary Parrish, whoever is listening, let me just clarify this for you. This
Janice Jammer
is not a Final Four team. So no, let's just stop acting like they are and get that over with. Are they talented? Sure. Will they win some games that they probably shouldn't the rest of the year? Yeah, probably. But this is not a very good basketball team. I think they're good enough with Leslie McDonald at least. They'll probably make the tournament because, I mean, certainly they've got three good wins so far. Profile-wise, they're going to be okay even if they get upset a couple more times. But this is a team that, okay, maybe as a, I don't know, you know, maybe as a 5-12 or a 6-11 or an 8-9 game you don't want to see in the first round. But it's not a team that's going to win a lot of basketball games this year. And, you know, I give credit for, you know, to some, obviously to some extent you got to give some Davidson some credit. But the problem is, you know, even though Davidson shot the ball very well, I thought they kind of got tired at the end of the game. You know, part of that is being worn down by North Carolina's athleticism. And part of it is just I think that, you know, they had so much emotion and just, you know, it just kind of all fell apart. North Carolina pulled out the game. Good for them. But this is a team that's going to lose a lot of basketball games this year relative to North Carolina's, you know, basketball.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And look, that's not completely unexpected. I mean, I think coming into the season, people weren't that sure what they were going to get out of this North Carolina squad. Look, I mean, as we said, they've had some good wins. They've had some bad losses. This is definitely the profile of a team that's still relatively young. I mean, most of their key contributors are freshmen or sophomores. Obviously, McAdoo's a junior. But they're a young team. You know, this is not a team that you're going to be able to rely on consistently night in and night out. But they're talented enough that they can pull off victories that one might not expect. But this is something that's frustrating every year in college basketball. The people that cover the sport really get caught up in narrative. And I understand that. It happens in every sport. It's not something unique to college basketball. But, you know, you can't write a narrative about this North Carolina team and only look at the good things that they've done. You have to also look at the performance at UAB. You have to look at the performance versus Belmont. You know, you have to look at the loss to Texas. All of that has to be in the equation. And I feel like a lot of the attention has just been on the fact that they beat Louisville and they beat Michigan State. And frankly, I think a lot of the attention they got off of the Kentucky game was undeserved because I don't think Kentucky's that good of a basketball team. I mean, they're a talented basketball team, but I don't think they're particularly that good. So, North Carolina, you know, it's going to be interesting because they've got a couple weeks here where they don't have a challenging game. Can they get through these next four games unscathed as they lead into that trip to the Carrier Dome to take on Syracuse? That's going to really be interesting to watch. I think Kyle, you hit it on the head. I mean, I think they could rise as high as a four seed just because they're North Carolina and they'll get some degree of support from the committee and from the people that surround college basketball just because of that. But it's going to be interesting. And you know, David, you look at this North Carolina team. And you can't really write them off in the ACC because as we're looking at the ACC right now, this is still a conference with a lot of questions once you get past Syracuse and Duke. And with the news coming out of Notre Dame today, the questions, I think, just got greater for this conference.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about that. I mean, outside of Syracuse and Duke, and, well, of course, there isn't any question about the bottom of the league when you get down to Clemson and Virginia Tech. I mean, that's unquestionably bad. North Carolina is just all over the place. I mean, that's sort of like saying the sky is blue. I mean, to beat Louisville on a neutral floor, and this is a Louisville team that I think is going to be pretty good. They don't have a whole lot of good wins, but they have manhandled some decent teams. I mean, they've looked like a top-10 team against Southern Miss and, you know, Missouri State and teams that might be fringe 11, 12 seed-ish type teams. Louisville's killed them. North Carolina beats them. They go to Michigan State and win. And then they have to sweat out a Davidson team that it's not just unquestionable because of their record. This is a Davidson team that just isn't very good. I'm starting to think that they're not even the best team in the SoCon. Elon and some others are looking a little better. You know, losing at home to Texas and home to a Belmont team that looked okay against Kentucky. But this has been a very disappointing Belmont team since that win. You know, losing badly at Denver and South Dakota State. So they're all over the place. I think if they get a 3 or a 4 seed, they're probably going to go out in the first or second round. And if they fall to a 7 or 8 seed, they'll probably go to the Final Four.
David, let me keep it with you, and I wanted to stick on that the Notre Dame thing I mentioned earlier, but Jerry and Grant, for those of you who haven't heard, the leading scorer for Notre Dame, out for the rest of the year, an academic matter, apparently. This was something that he talked about in an open letter that he wrote to Notre Dame fans. It was published on the Notre Dame website today. Who knows? This is very similar to the Golston situation in football for this Notre Dame athletics department. But, you know, this was an Notre Dame team that was obviously very up and down. They had the one win that looked relatively decent, I guess, against Indiana. And then they almost beat Ohio State, yesterday, and they end up losing that game 64-61. But now Notre Dame, I mean, without a guy who has, you know, contributed just a tremendous amount offensively, he's 49th or was 49th coming into today in offensive rating. He was 31st in the country in percentage of minutes played, which is pretty sizable. This is a huge chunk of this Notre Dame squad that's gone now, David. And, yeah, you know, they don't really have a lot on their resume right now. Their one win against Indiana, Indiana might not even make the tournament this year. So what do you foresee for this Irish squad?
Well, more of the same. I mean, you know, they didn't, other than the best thing that they had done all year was that they almost beat Ohio State, and for 39 minutes, they looked incredible. But other than that, like, they hadn't really looked like a tournament team. They had beaten Indiana, but you said it yourself, Indiana's not that good, so they hadn't really done anything to establish themselves, and now perhaps their best player is done. And there is... I am aware that he's ineligible. Is it because of an academic technicality, or is he just done? There's no chance of getting him back.
It looks like he's done. I mean, according to what the press release said, it sounds like he's done for the spring semester, and the fall semester just ended today, I think. So
yes, he could play all the way up until classes start again, but there's no point in doing that.
Right.
So, because even if they did get some big wins, the committee would disregard them.
Right. So Kyle, I mean, walk me through the ACC right now. I mean, obviously with, you know, you got Duke, they're in great shape for, you know, a high seed in the tournament. Syracuse is probably in better shape for a high seed. And then you've got Virginia, who struggled a bit, but I think they'll be fine. What do you see after that with this conference, particularly with this news about Notre Dame?
I see a lot of mediocrity. I mean, I think that after Syracuse and Duke, I mean, you've got North Carolina, Virginia, Pittsburgh, you know, and I don't see much else after that. I mean, Georgia Tech is a mediocre team. Wake Forest is a mediocre team. NC State's been bad. We don't even need to talk about Virginia Tech and Miami on this show. And BC as well. I'm sorry not to include them in that group. I mean, no, it's just, you know, for all of the press that the ACC was getting before the season, and I mean, to be fair, I think the cynics in us on this show at least saw through that, you know, but it's just, it has not lived up to its billing as the best conference in America this year. I mean, the Big Ten once again is showing that it probably is the best league in the country. You know, Pac-12, I think, is second, and you know, no offense to Jimmy Dykes, who's out there talking about the Big 12 getting 7 bids. I think the Big 12 is a good league, but it's, you know, but no, it's just, I mean, the ACC is just, you get past those first couple teams right now, and you just get a lot of, you know, a lot of mediocrity. I mean, it's not a bad league, certainly by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not, you know, it's not as powerful at the top, the upper half, as I think everybody, you know, was saying at the beginning of the year.
It is, I think, maybe slightly better than the SEC, and at least they've got that going for them. But, you know, I mean, it's odd. I mean, it's not odd, because those of us who have paid attention for the last decade know that the talk of the ACC is being a power conference as the best conference in America was way overblown. And frankly, you know, you look at the teams that they brought in this merger. Obviously, Syracuse is a fine basketball team, but, I mean, you get beyond that. I mean, you know, Pittsburgh was not going to give them the sort of boost that people seem to think. Yeah, Pittsburgh's won a lot of games this year, and it's been against practically no decent competition.
Yeah, can I just say, like, as someone that loved the idea of breaking up traditional rivalries and having 27 teams in one conference, I'm shocked. I am shocked.
Well... But here's the thing. I don't even think it's the lack of the breaking up of the rivalries.
It feel better to say that it is.
I'm glad you're getting some kind of perverse pleasure in this. I just enjoy it because, again, this was the narrative coming into the year. You know, was that this was going to be, you know, a conference for the ages. You know, right off the bat, like coming right out of the gate, and it hasn't been that way, and it's not going to be. I mean, these teams aren't going to get miraculously better. And I look at the teams in the ACC right now. Syracuse is the only one I see as a legitimate title threat. I mean, I think Duke, you know, who's gotten most of the press in this conference so far this season. Yeah, they looked really nice against UCLA on Thursday night, but Duke's got some serious flaws that talented, well-coached teams are really going to be able to take advantage of, I think, Kyle.
I mean, Galen.
That's only if you consider having a god-awful defense a flaw, Galen.
Well, yes. Kyle, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, we're sitting here, and there's still, you know, I mean, granted, there's still, you know, a couple months of the season left before we get to March, but I mean, here it is, December, you know, December 22nd as we do this show, and honestly, there are 5 tournament contenders in the ACC right now. That's it. I mean, no, those 5 are probably going to be pretty easy shoe-ins for the tournament, but, I mean, after those 5...
Duke, North Carolina, Syracuse,
Virginia-Pittsburgh.
Okay. I mean, well, and even Pitt. I'm not sold on Pitt.
Well, here's the thing that I think people need to keep in mind. I mean, we're not just needlessly bashing the ACC. We're bashing the ACC because we have a good reason to. Pitt, currently, their best win is a neutral court victory against a Stanford team that might not make the NCAA tournament. Virginia, their best win so far is a neutral court victory over an SMU team that almost certainly will not make the tournament. Florida State, their best win. They actually may have.
I like them. Okay,
they actually look okay, but they handed UMass their first loss on a quasi neutral floor yesterday. But even the win that they have against VCU, I mean, it's not a lock that VCU is going to make the tournament necessarily, because that VCU team really only has one win of note, and they've got at least one bad loss on their resume already. So you start getting down into those reaches of the middle portion of the conference, and the good wins just stop. There just aren't that many of them there to begin with. So, Kyle, I think your point is well taken.
Yeah, I do think Florida State, because they've got a couple decent wins. I mean, obviously, win against UMass was a pretty good win. Win against VCU was decent. I mean, I should include Florida State as a contending team. I think that they could still work themselves into that group. But I mean, still to the point though, when you're talking a league of 15 teams, you know, having a chance only to get 5 or 6 is not a good sign for the league.
Yeah. So. Just something to keep an eye on. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what sort of separation occurs within the conference because, frankly, you know, you're kind of expecting the cream to rise to the top. I think we're expecting Syracuse and Duke to really kind of ride above the fray, and then maybe North Carolina joins them in that pack. Maybe they're in a second tier with Virginia. Maybe Florida State's in there as well. But it'll be interesting to watch, and I think that There's a lot of teams there that really need some good wins, and they're going to have to pick them up against other teams in the ACC, which will ultimately hurt some of those teams' chances of getting to the NCAA tournament. Anyway, let's switch gears. Let's move forward to the games that we saw on Saturday. A couple of Big Ten teams with some interesting victories. First off, let's start in St. Louis. This was one of the closest games. It was one of the more intriguing ones. Illinois taking on Missouri. In the bragging rights contest. And, you know, Illinois, a team that I've had some questions about, particularly after that bizarre loss to Georgia Tech, and the fact that really they had no good wins on their resume whatsoever. I mean, they had 10 win, or excuse me, 9 wins going into yesterday, and their best win was arguably a home game against Valpo, which that's not going to pay the bills. But they got it done against Frank Haith in Missouri, 65-64 yesterday. And, you know, David, obviously this is one of those games that fits squarely in the traditional rivalry sense, so obviously you're thrilled about it. But I think both these teams really needed to win this game, and I give Illinois a lot of credit for figuring out a way to pull it out.
Yeah. Now, the bragging rights game, I mean, it seems to be a standalone event. And miraculously, I mean, if you go back 10 years, how many of them come down to the last 30 seconds and whatnot? So I like it as an event. It was fun. At the end of the day, I don't think Missouri is that good. And I really don't think Illinois is either. And right. I think that will sort of work itself out as they get in the conference play. Missouri, Kyle can speak to this even better than I can, it's a snake pit at home. They beat top 10 teams at home. The second they leave home, they lose to bad, really bad teams. And this game was not at home. Now, again, it's a game that they typically do well in. I think they'd won the previous 4, albeit by a total of 9 or 10 points or whatever it was. But, I mean, still, they leave home. They don't win. Illinois is not that good. I wouldn't be surprised if they're both NIT teams.
Well, you know, I am interested about
it. Is it even going to be a good win for Illinois?
Well, I think it'll be an okay win for Illinois just because Missouri, two things. One, I mean, they beat UCLA, they beat West Virginia. Those will show up on the resume. I'm really curious to see what happens with Missouri a week from yesterday when they travel to North Carolina State. That's a game they should win because this is not that great of a North Carolina State team. But if they lose that game, then I think your hypothesis may get turned into a theory. But they're going to rack up a lot of wins in a really subpar SEC. So from a numbers perspective, at least RPI-wise, that will help them out somewhat. But as far as Illinois, Kyle, it is interesting what John Gross is doing so far with this team. I mean, it's a very young team in terms of, you know, the bulk of their players are freshmen, but he's doing it mostly with the play of, you know, of Rice and Abrams and Bertrand and Egwu, who are really the resident upperclassmen. And I guess we got to throw Ikey in there as well. They don't have a lot of depth on this team. They haven't really beaten anybody except for Missouri so far. I really don't have a good sense as to who this Illinois team is or whether they're going to be able to be successful in conference play.
Well, you know, they're very dependent on Rivante and Rice right now. You know, we saw this against Georgia Tech. Rice was carrying them in the second half. He stopped being involved, and you know, next thing you know, they blow a 12-point lead. Georgia Tech wins. We saw the same thing against Missouri for a brief amount of time. You know, they built a second half lead. Rice was out of the game for a couple minutes, and then they brought him back in. He wasn't a factor for several minutes. Missouri made a run, and you know, Missouri looked like it was going to pull the game out the last 5 minutes because Rice wasn't a factor. They did finally get Rice the ball a couple of last possessions. They ended up winning the game, and that's been a microcosm of their entire season. They are very dependent on him, and I like what Gross is doing just because they don't have a lot of weapons right now. They're very dependent on one or two players. But they've got just enough of a supporting cast. If they keep Rice in the game, keep him involved, they're good enough to knock some teams off. And I think they've got a limited ceiling. They're not going to be top five in the Big Ten this year. I think they can still work themselves into, you know, a possible NCAA tournament bid if they can just toe the line, do what they're supposed to do, especially at home, and you know, maybe knock off a couple of the upper tier teams. They've got a chance to make the tournament.
It's really going to be interesting because the first Big Ten game for Illinois is a home game versus Indiana, and I see a lot of similarities between these two teams just in terms of the way that they're made up. I mean, this dichotomy between experienced players and freshmen and, you know, kind of a lack of accomplishment against the upper crust of college basketball thus far. I think Illinois probably, on the whole, has probably looked slightly better, but that could be a bellwether game. You know, if Illinois is able to win that game, obviously they need to win home games in general in the Big Ten if they're going to compete for a tournament bid. But it'll be an interesting barometer for both squads, I think, to see them playing against each other and see where they fall on the spectrum. Another Big Ten team in action yesterday, and one that I think had it was an interesting outcome for a couple of reasons, Kyle. Michigan and Stanford. Michigan ends up winning the game by 3, which in and of itself wasn't that surprising. They were projected to win that game, and it was a nice bounce back a week after a difficult loss at home to the number one team in the country. But the big story from this game was that Mitch McGarry didn't play at all. And, you know, they're able to win a game on a neutral floor. This was in Brooklyn. Against a Stanford team that's, you know, given a decent go of it so far this season, all things considered. I mean, they did beat UConn on the road earlier on in the week, which was a pretty impressive victory given how UConn's played. But the fact that McGarry didn't play and Michigan was still able to come away with the victory, that's good news for Michigan, but it's also kind of bad news at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's good news in the micro that they were able to win without him. On the other hand, let's take into account the Stanford team. We still don't really know what they are. They had a win at Stanford, or they had a win at Connecticut the other day, but, I mean, how much do we really know about that win yet? I mean, it's still too early to tell. It is good in the short term, but if this is indicative of a longer-term issue, and the fact is when you get a seven-footer with back problems, that's never you're never optimistic about that kind of thing. And so if this becomes a long-term lingering issue, this is going to be bad news for them because I don't think they're. I mean, they might still make the tournament if McGarry can't go a lot of the season, but I mean, their potential is severely limited if he's not in the lineup. And we've already talked about McGarry not living up to expectations as is, but he's still a better player than what they have, you know, to fill in his place.
Well, and that's the thing that I was going to bring up. I mean, you look at the lack of experience overall for this Michigan squad. I mean, a lot of people, you talk about Illinois, you talk about Indiana as having a relative lack of experience. Michigan's actually less experienced than both of those teams. It's one of the least experienced teams in terms of on-court time in the country. And that's with Nick Stauskas and Glenn Robinson and Mitch McGarry on the floor. You know, and so you look at the front line for Michigan. Who do they put in? I mean, you know, they're already more John Horford, more Jordan Morgan. I don't think that's going to get the job done for them. You know, and so a Michigan team that looked like they were going to be firmly in that upper echelon of Big Ten squads, if they're without McGarry for any period of time, that's going to be a real problem for them. And it's something to keep in mind as we move forward into Big Ten play. They start off Big Ten play, and they have to travel to Minnesota. And again, that's a Minnesota team that's looked pretty good so far this season. That could be a real bad recipe for this Michigan team.
Now, does the Big Ten start next week or the week after?
New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Yeah. So something to keep in mind there is as you know the Big Ten. You know, starting to get ready to start play. Obviously Ohio State and Notre Dame, that was the outcome that everybody expected, Ohio State winning the game, although it was only by 3, and they had a big comeback in the last minute to make it happen. Kyle, a quick word from you on that, and then I want to go to David on something else. But I know you weren't surprised that they ended up winning the game, but were you surprised that it was as much of a struggle as it ended up being?
Yes and no. I thought it was going to be close. I mean, if you had told me Ohio State was going to win by 3, I would have said that sounded about right. I would have just never known it would have been the way it happened. There's good news, bad news here for Ohio State. The bad news is, they looked like Indiana against the zone for 15 minutes in the second half. I mean, they just weren't hitting shots, weren't attacking it. They just couldn't do anything against it. The good news is they were facing a very good offensive team, and they were still in the game despite hitting 3 of 18 from three-point range against the top 25 offense. I think that just goes to show. I mean, this is a team, Notre Dame, that was scoring 1.15 points per possession adjusted for competition. Ohio State held them to 0.9 points yesterday. Ohio State's defense is absolutely as advertised. It's the best defense in the country. It's going to keep them in every game. They certainly can't go 3 of 18 from three-point range and expect to be a national title contender. I don't think that's going to be the rule. I think it's more of an exception. So it was certainly not expected. I didn't ever anticipate them being down by 8 with a minute to go. I'm still trying to figure out how the hell the last minute happened, but it did. A win's a win. It was an interesting finish, definitely one for, one you only see once every couple years.
Yeah, absolutely. So next week when we do our show before the new year, we'll give you our conference predictions, not just for the Big Ten, but for the rest of college basketball. But, David, I wanted to jump coasts here and head out to the West Coast. A nice win last night in Eugene as Oregon takes out BYU in overtime. Oregon 11-0. On the season, and I think both these teams with some interesting things here. Now, first off, for Oregon, they're slowly amassing a nice little group of wins against borderline tournament teams. I mean, they've got Georgetown, Ole Miss, Illinois, and now BC or BYU. Two of those games ended up in overtime. Really high scoring Oregon squad. Their defense is still pretty suspect, but it looks like if they win against Morgan State next week, they're going to end up 12-0 going into the Pac-12 season. How do you feel about the Ducks right now?
I still really like them. I've liked them from the beginning. I mean, they were my preseason pick to win the Pac-12. Now, the thing is, I was actually more impressed with BYU than I was with Oregon. And not to crap on them, but, you're talking about Ole Miss, who lost again today, Illinois, who is a fringe tournament team at best. I think that's generous. BYU is pretty solid, but they're still not going to be a protected seed by any means. They're having to sweat out a lot of these games, and that suddenly has me iffy, because when they go to Colorado, that's going to be a very difficult game. Arizona is tough. UCLA is good. The competition that they're going to face in conference, at least at the top of the league, is a lot better than some of the teams that they've had to sweat out. Now, again, to me, Ole Miss is forgivable because it's hard to go on the road and beat anybody, and they did. But, to cut it close against Illinois and BYU in your own building, Illinois was in Portland, but it was still a very, very much pro-Oregon crowd. And then BYU, it's just a little bit, is this team really going to contend with the tops of the Pac-12?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I Not that the, I mean, Arizona's obviously distanced themselves from a lot of teams in the Pac-12 at this stage. But, it makes you wonder how this Oregon team is going to fare. I want to talk more Pac-12 in a second. But before I do that, I did want to talk a little bit about BYU, David. I mean, this is a BYU team now that's 8-5. They've lost three of their last four. And none of those losses have been bad losses, per se. I mean, the UMass loss was in a semi-away environment. Utah, I mean, that's not a great loss, but Utah's not a terrible team this year. And then, of course, Oregon, we were just talking about. Their other two losses were Wichita State and Iowa State. That's all well and good, but at some point you got to stop losing games. And
yeah.
I worry a little bit about this BYU team. As entertaining as they have been to watch, they're the fastest team in the country, but they really don't have many chances to pick up quality wins in conference play, and that's all they've got left now.
Yeah, and again, it's just what do you do with a team that bloats out their record in conference, finishes with a very impressive overall record, has maybe one or two good wins, but not great wins, and no bad losses. Teams like that generally get in, so I think they'll be fine. Now, they do need to beat St. Mary's or Gonzaga at least once.
Each.
You think each?
Yeah. I think each. Yeah, well, because here's the problem. Here's the problem I see with what they've got right now. I mean, their best wins, they have a road win against Stanford, which might end up being a good win, but it depends on how Stanford does in the Pac-12. They have a neutral court win against Texas, which suddenly looks really good.
Top 25.
Yeah. I mean, that's gotten better and better as the season's gone on, and that's it. Like, there's nothing else that the tournament committee is going to look at.
Right. The only reason I say that is if you look at Middle Tennessee last year, if you look at teams – now, the difference is Middle Tennessee won their league. If you look at teams that schedule hard, lose most of them, you know, where their losses aren't bad and they get one or two decent wins and then they blow through their conference, teams like that generally go.
Yeah, except I almost feel like BYU is not a small enough team to get the benefit that Middle Tennessee or teams like that get for that sort of schedule. I mean, that would be the only thing I'd be concerned about. One last thing I wanted to point out on BYU, Matt Carlino, who's just a remarkable head case, like a glorious head case on the court. He has taken 31.1% of his team shots. That's 75th in the nation. His offensive rating is 93.9. How? Like what on what planet is that a good offensive scheme? Can anybody explain this to me, please?
Yeah. Oh god. I could answer that, but I better not.
Dave Rose might want to think about telling him, you know, hey, don't shoot so much.
He's shooting 28% from three. He's taken 64 threes this year, and he's hitting. The bigger problem is he's shooting 42% from two, and he's taken 139 of those.
Well, and I don't want to pin this on one guy, but he's a large reason why they lost to Oregon. I mean, he certainly made some shots early in the game, but late in the game when they had a chance to ice the game with just normal execution, he took some absolutely horrible challenge shots in the last 5 minutes.
Yep. And look, I actually have a soft spot in my heart for Matt Carlino. I broadcasted his games when he was in high school here locally. It's just fascinating to watch this unfold because, you know, he was an okay offensive threat last year. I mean, you look at his historical numbers. He was at about a point per possession last year. He wasn't taking nearly as many shots overall, but his possession numbers have gone way up, and frankly, his shooting has not matched. In fact, it's gone the opposite direction. So if he gets it together, they could be really dangerous. And when he's on in a game, he can hit some unbelievable shots, but he's really got to be on. Anyway, a couple other games. What?
You just opened that door. That's not my fault, Galen. You said on what planet, and you were referencing BYU. Not my fault.
Okay, I guess I deserved that one. Let's go back to the Pac-12 real quick. There was another game in Vegas last night that was of interest. Oklahoma State and Colorado. Colorado loses this game to Oklahoma State 78-73. Colorado continues to look good. I mean, they were in this one for most of the game. And really they could afford to lose neutral court to an Oklahoma State team that's clearly top five. Kyle, I like what I see out of the Buffalo at this point. I think if their offense ever comes around, their defense is already there waiting for them.
Yeah, they're keeping themselves in games. They just they've got to be able to hit shots consistently enough to overcome it. I mean, you know, they certainly looked like they belonged on the same floor with Oklahoma State. They were just never able to get over the hump. But you know, Marcus Smart was just a terror against them yesterday. I mean, he it seemed like every time they tried to do something, I mean, he was disrupting their offense. And I don't. I think part of that is just Marcus Smart being Marcus Smart, and some of it is being Colorado being Colorado. But I mean, they're a good team. They're going to be on the bubble. They're going to be in the thick of tournament discussion all year long. They're going to win
way
some games
inside the bubble.
Yeah, they're going to win plenty of games. It's just are they going to be able to be a protected seed? You know, too early to say. But I mean, they're a good basketball team.
How, Kyle, how deep do you see the Pac-12 going? I mean, obviously Arizona, Colorado, UCLA, Oregon, I think all those teams look pretty good value for making the NCAA tournament. I think you could throw, probably at this point, you could throw Arizona State into that mix as well. You get past that, though. I mean, Cal just got, beaten pretty handily tonight by Creighton, and that's their fourth loss of the season. We talked about Stanford already. Utah... they beat BYU, and that's all they've got on their schedule so far. Anybody else pop out? How many of those teams do you see as being legitimate contenders for the tournament?
I think probably five or six of them are as contenders. I think we're still waiting to see just what Stanford is or isn't. It's too early to say on them because they've been kind of Jekyll and Hyde so far. I think as far as depth is concerned, I mean, I think. 1 through 10, I think the Pac-12 is really competitive this year. I mean, they're not going to have anywhere near 8 or 9 tournament bids by any stretch of the imagination. But teams, I would say 6 through 10 are really good. I mean, even USC, let's be honest, they don't have the talent to do it this year. They're showing signs of getting better under Andy Enfield. And I'm not just saying that because they beat Dayton today, but they have looked better. I mean, they're not a tournament team by any means. You know, they're a year or two away from that type of talk. But yeah, I mean, I like the depth in this league this year. I think as far as tournament bids, though, to answer your question, I see 5, maybe 6.
David?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, the one thing about Colorado is that it just seems like they're getting exponentially better. And not just on paper, but like on the court, they looked so bad in their first couple of games. And then last night, I was actually kind of expecting them to win that game. They didn't, but they keep playing really well. I mean, I just really think that once they hit their stride, they're going to be full force. But, I mean, you got Colorado, you got Oregon. I don't know about Utah yet. I mean, they did blow BYU's doors off, but that was one of those emotional rivals. UCLA should be in the mix. Of course, Arizona. I could easily – I think 5 are inside the bubble and maybe a 6th or a 7th on it.
All right. Let's jump over, David, to the Big East. This is a conference that's been a little bit confusing. We have to, yes. We're contractually obligated to talk about the Big East, unfortunately. Villanova, this is a team we were talking about on email this week. Seeding-wise, right now, I mean, they're probably, they're definitely in the protected seed discussion. And, they beat Kansas and Iowa on neutral floors. I think both those wins will go a long way down the stretch. They have a big game coming up this weekend against Syracuse, and then they get right into conference play. You have to really wonder what their ceiling is at this stage. It's been shocking how good of defense they have been playing so far this season, but their offense hasn't been shabby. And, with the wins that they've got so far on the resume and the fact that a lot of the Big East really doesn't look like they're going to be consistent enough to really challenge. This could be a really good season for Villanova.
Yes, this is both praiseworthy of Nova and damning of the rest of the league. They should be favored in every single conference game. I mean, they've gone out, they've gotten quality wins. Other than maybe, Xavier winning at home against Tennessee and at Alabama, neither of which, who were at least NIT teams, I guess.
Right.
And then they had the neutral floor win against Cincinnati, who's been writing a book on how to underwhelm America this year themselves. Nobody else in that league has any wins. I mean, they have a lot of – they've bloated out – nobody else has any quality wins. No one else – and on top of that, they haven't even looked that good. I mean, Creighton looked good tonight. That's about it.
You know, and I will say this, they are favored in every game except one, according to KenPom. They're favored, or the Creighton is favored in their home game versus Villanova in mid-February. But every other game KenPom currently has Villanova as favored to win. But Kyle, an interesting game that happened, I think it was yesterday actually, but Marquette played New Mexico. That was the first game that happened in Vegas, and New Mexico ended up winning that game 75-68. Now Marquette sits at 7-5, and I mean they've got an okay win, a neutral court victory against George Washington on their resume, but the rest of their resume right now is pretty putrid. They've lost all of the challengeable games that they've had, and you know their offense still really hasn't done much so far this season. I'd be a little uncomfortable if I was a fan of this Marquette squad.
You've got to be very uncomfortable right now. And here's the problem. Marquette is a very, I don't want to say a very good basketball team, but they are a good basketball team, but they're not getting the wins they need to get. I mean, like you said, they've lost to pretty much every, you know, tournament-type team they've played so far. And you just, you know, unfortunately, the Big East is not deep enough to have a chance to get a lot of quality wins this year. And, you know, they're sitting. I think that they'll get the benefit of the doubt because of the tough schedule they've played. If they can get some wins, but they're in a position now where they've got to win against almost every quality team here they play going forward if they want to get a tournament bid. Because I mean, they're what, like, you know, at this point 0-6 against teams that are going to be in the tournament. I mean, you got to start winning these games.
Kyle, to further your point, their best win by far, it's not even close, is George Washington. And I know the RPI is not the best indicator, especially right now. But going by that, their second best win is Grambling.
it doesn't matter what system you go by. That's not a good second best win.
No. Well, I will say this also about the schedule situation. Marquette, their overall strength of schedule is 169, so it's really not even as good as it looks. Like, I mean, the teams that they've lost to, even though they played Ohio State, Wisconsin, overall, the bad teams they played have been so bad that it's dragged down their overall strength of schedule to a point where they won't get the credit for it. Now, it's interesting, they have a companion team in the same conference that's kind of facing similar issues, and that's Georgetown. Georgetown also missing a lot of quality wins. They do have the VCU victory earlier on this year, but they lost to Northeastern in the same tournament, which, frankly, that almost cancels that one out. They got blown out by Kansas yesterday. I mean, that game really wasn't close. And, you know, I mean, they're just not that great of a team, it seems like. I mean, they're a very middling sort of squad.
That's the key difference. At least Marquette's playing competitively right down to the wire. I mean, Georgetown is just getting throttled right now.
But at the same time, at least Georgetown has beaten somebody. I mean, Marquette hasn't beaten anybody, unless you consider George Washington to be somebody.
I don't know that George Washington is that far off from VCU. I mean, at this point, if you look at, I mean, let's take George Washington as an example. I mean, they're 10-1 on the season, and you know they beat Creighton on a neutral floor.
Yeah.
They beat Maryland on a neutral floor. They beat Manhattan, which is an okay win, but it was on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we'll learn more about whoever set this schedule up for George Washington. I don't know who the hell it was. If it was Mike Lonergan, I tip my hat to him for at least picking some interesting games. They play at Kansas State on New Year's Eve, that's a team I have no freaking clue what to make of after what happened yesterday. We'll talk about that game in just a second. But, you know, I don't know. I question at this point whether VCU is tremendously better than George Washington, because who has VCU beaten other than Virginia at this stage?
Well, nobody. Yeah, nobody.
So,
Virginia Tech.
Well, no. Is that anybody at this point?
No.
Yeah.
I want to say they beat somebody else in the tournament once.
But anyway, the Big East overall, I think this is one that bears watching because, you know, Xavier and Butler have done what they needed to do. I mean, Xavier had one loss that was poor but not awful. It was a neutral court loss to USC. But, you know, they beat Tennessee. They beat Alabama on the road. They beat Cincinnati. Those wins they needed to have. Butler, I don't really expect Butler to compete for the tournament this year, but they put themselves in a position where they could at least be in the conversation if they play well in the conference. You know, they beat Purdue, they beat Vanderbilt, they beat Princeton.
Princeton, which I didn't think anything of at the time, but that win, that's actually looking decent.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And so, you know, but you get beyond that, the Big East is really not going to go any deeper than that at this stage, I think. I mean, St. John's and Providence, neither of them have really accomplished anything so far this season, and I don't see them really starting. They're not projected to do particularly well in the Big East. So another conference that bears watching as we move forward here. Anyway, as we start to wrap up this section of the show, I did want to talk a little bit about just some isolated games that have happened. I mentioned earlier on, well, actually Kyle mentioned it, the Big 12, Jimmy Dykes making what was it that Jimmy Dykes said about the Big 12, Kyle? Remind me again.
He said that the Big 12 could very well get seven teams in.
Seven teams in what?
Well, he said the NCAA tournament, but but then again, Jimmy Dykes, he says so many cliches. He might have been, you know, he might have been just speaking metaphorically. I don't know.
I mean, maybe it's fascinating though. I don't see where that many teams come from. I mean, they've got teams that haven't lost games. Obviously, Oklahoma State, Kansas, Iowa State, and you can throw Baylor in there as well, I guess. I mean, Baylor with wins against
those first three are legit. Baylor is a good team, but they're not in same breath as the other three.
I mean, they have beaten Colorado, they have beaten Dayton, they beat Kentucky. I mean, those are decent wins overall. But you get past that. Oklahoma has beaten nobody. I mean, their best win is
lost to Arlington the other night.
Yeah, and that's a bad look for anybody. But I mean, the Oklahoma's best win is a neutral court game against an Alabama team that ain't making the tournament. You go to Texas. I mean, North Carolina on the road. That's a nice win. Could that alone get them into the tournament? It might. I mean, the bubble looks a little bit weak so far this year. But
North Carolina beat Kentucky, so therefore, I mean, by...
Right.
Texas, I know they didn't win against Michigan State, but I was actually... I had more respect for them after that game than I did before it. Because I just chalked it up to a fluke win against a schizophrenic team.
Yeah.
The North Carolina game. But they actually looked good in that game.
Sure.
They looked good for a half. I don't know.
That was the half I watched.
Well, okay.
I missed the whole game, so I'm going to have to take your guys' word for it.
For the first half, they looked good. The second half, though, they kind of got their doors blown off. I mean, it was they kept it misleadingly close, but it was never really within 12 for the last 10 minutes of that game.
Now, can we chat a little bit about this Kansas State team, which I'm beyond understanding at this stage. This is a Kansas State team that lost at home to Northern Colorado, lost on a neutral court to Charlotte, and yet has beaten Mississippi and beat Gonzaga by 12 yesterday. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even have that on my watch list. And I look at the scores at the end of the day, and I'm like, how the hell did they beat them by 12? Did either of you watch this game? How did it happen?
They actually looked – well, I think it was a combination of Kansas State looking decent and Gonzaga looking terrible. I mean, I hadn't been really paying attention to Kansas State. Because the only two games I really saw were their two losses to Charlotte in Northern Colorado, and it's like, well, this team isn't any good. But, right. You know, they did beat Ole Miss. They've beaten Gonzaga. They might not be too bad.
Kyle?
I didn't get to see it, but I will say they had a bad injury in this game to Sam Dower. He went down, I think, mid to late first half, and Kansas State went on a run after that. Now, Gonzaga came back in the second half, made it interesting, but then Kansas State went on a big run to end the game. I'm not going to attribute all of this to Dower's injury, but that is part of it. You know, he went down, and they weren't the same in the rest of that game. And actually, this is a bigger deal long term, because if Dower is out for any period of time, and it looks like it could be a serious injury, their front court is extremely weak, and I don't, they're going to find themselves having a hard time, I think, winning the West Coast if he's out for any period of time.
Yeah, there's a question to be raised about this Gonzaga team, about whether they're actually in good shape to make the tournament at this point, and this is something.
They are.
We just assume that they do their normal Gonzaga thing of playing a good non-conference schedule and then blowing through the West Coast Conference. But right now, their best win is a neutral court game against Arkansas, maybe?
I would say so.
It's either that or it's the West Virginia game on the road, and frankly, Purdue just beat West Virginia on the road. That's not that good of a win.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, you're making us talk about Kansas State. Let's not also talk about West Virginia. My heart can't take that.
No. My point is, though, we were just talking about BYU earlier on and how they need to beat St. Mary's or Gonzaga, we think, at least once. Is that going to be a good win, necessarily? Because Gonzaga themselves, really, they don't have a good win. And they've got a West Coast Conference schedule that is pretty subpar because the West Coast Conference, you know, we look at those top three teams, and right now, as far as just accrued accomplishment, none of them have really accomplished much. BYU's accomplished the most. I mean, St. Mary's, they're 9-0, but their top four wins are against North Dakota State, Akron, Louisiana Tech, and Boise State. The Boise State game was on the road. The rest of them were at home.
Yeah,
none of those teams might make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, now, St. Mary's, if they go out, if the Diamond Head plays out the way that I think it will, like they will have beaten Boise State again on a neutral floor. They play tonight, I believe. If they play and beat Iowa State in that championship game, I think their profile will look really good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But right now it doesn't, yeah. I guess, is my point. One thing I would like to note, we do have a Craig Robinson in progress right now on ESPNU. If you're not watching this, Akron is leading Oregon State in the closing minutes. It's funny, I mean, even though KenPom would call this an upset if Akron no, take that back. He would call it an upset if Oregon State won. Akron was actually projected to win this game by two, but still. It's more of a road game for Akron at this stage. That's a much longer flight for the Zips. So that wraps up the recap portion of the schedule here, guys. Let's take a look at the games moving forward this week. We've got some interesting ones, obviously, and some of them are tied up in the Diamond Head Classic. We're not really going to talk about those games because we don't know if they're going to happen yet. There's really nothing going on tomorrow of note. Really no games. I mean, if you're a real diehard, maybe check out Morehead State at Tennessee. I'm not expecting much out of that one, but that's really about it.
I'm a diehard, and I will not be watching that.
Okay. There's no games at all on Christmas Eve. None. Zero. So, sorry.
Not even Diamond Head games?
Well, except for the Diamond Head games, but I'm saying there's no games scheduled other than that at this point.
Okay, yeah.
Same thing with Christmas. Same thing with the day after Christmas. We have to jump all the way forward to Friday. And again, you've got really a miserable battle. This is not even a rivalry for many reasons, but Kyle, we've got DePaul at Northwestern.
Oh, gosh, you're killing me.
Who wins this one and why?
Is there a third choice?
No, there's not. Sorry.
Good grief.
Can we
talk about David Griggs' desire to get Kansas and Missouri together? I mean,
no, we cannot. That's talked about every week. But that
needs to happen, by the way. Okay. Those two should play.
Just stop. Jesus. Anyway, Saturday the 28th, we do have some decent games, actually very good games. David, I'm going to go to you first. Rupp Arena,
by the way.
You think Northwestern wins? Okay, I'm going to go with you on
all
that
I'm
as
saying
well.
About that.
Yeah, I think Northwestern over DePaul is a pretty good pick. Anyway, David Griggs, Louisville and Kentucky from Rupp Arena. Obviously, Louisville, I think, has got to be the favorite in this just because of the way both these teams have played. But I don't know. I mean, I haven't. KenPom loves Louisville, but they really haven't beaten anybody. I mean, we've been ragging on all these teams for their schedule. Louisville's one game against a halfway decent opponent was against North Carolina, and they lost that game on a neutral floor. Yeah. Their next best win was against Southern Miss, who's not going anywhere near the tournament this season. So what do you make of this team?
I mean, if you look at CUSA, they may win it. But
They won't deserve to go. Let's put it that
way. I don't know. This Louisville team did themselves absolutely no favors scheduling the way that they did. I don't understand that. I get that it's nice to have 24,000 people and selling it out every night to watch you play the likes of, Missouri State. But they really put a lot of – they just haven't really done anything. And Kentucky really hasn't beaten anybody either. Now, I think Louisville has looked better because, I mean, at least they've blown out the mediocre teams that they've played, whereas Kentucky struggled against some of theirs. But
Kentucky's at least played some good teams. I think
they
is
have,
the point.
Yeah, and they have, and to their credit, that they did. Going in there, I think this is – obviously this is a bitter, bitter rivalry. But on paper, it actually has more meaning than what it normally does because neither team really has a big win yet on paper. The winner of this game, it probably ends up being easily their biggest win by far this year and maybe one of their bigger wins of the year. Louisville, again, will have some chances in conference, whereas but Kentucky probably won't. So this one's actually really important, and the thing about it is, if you've watched this game over the years, at least during the regular season, it's a poorly played game. There's lots of fouls. There's lots of physical play. Neither team can get into a flow. I mean, it's just like a rock fight. I don't know if that's – it's almost like it's a little too hot of a game. But this year, it actually means a lot on paper because who else is either of them beaten?
Yeah, it's true. Who do you pick in this game, David?
Louisville.
Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with Louisville. At this point, I don't have a lot of faith in Kentucky. I mean, they're certainly talented offensively, but it says a lot when their point guard is benched right now and John Calipari comes out and says Jared Polston is the best point guard on their roster. I mean, that says a lot. We're talking about a supposed first-round pick that gets benched for Jared Polston. Kentucky fundamentally they're lacking right now. I don't like Kentucky having to face this Louisville pressure. I'm still not convinced on Louisville, but I think Louisville wins this game by 8 to 10 points.
Yeah, I wanted to be contrarian and pick Kentucky here. I can't bring myself to do it. I think Louisville, even though they've beaten nobody, they at least know what it's like playing in big games like this. And Kentucky's had a few this season so far, but I don't think that. I mean, they don't have the tournament experience that Louisville has, and they don't have the big game overall experience that Louisville has. So I like the Cardinals in this game. Kyle, Carrier Dome this Saturday, Villanova and Syracuse. A big game for both teams, obviously, that no longer a conference rivalry. And bully to them for scheduling this, obviously. I think that's nice to see. Do you like Villanova's chances in this game, or is this one where Syracuse just kind of rides off into the sunset with the win?
I mean, I like Villanova's team. I think they're good defense, but this isn't the team to beat Syracuse. Villanova's shooting right now is not very good, and I don't think somebody can face this Syracuse team without being able to shoot. So I just think this is a bad matchup for Villanova. I think that they will win a lot of games with their defense. I don't think this is going to be one of them. I think Syracuse wins here at home.
It is worth mentioning, just for those who have forgotten, that last year, obviously these teams were in the same conference. Villanova did take Syracuse to overtime, but that game was in Philadelphia, and Villanova won that game 75-71. And they kept it relatively close in the game at the Carrier Dome. That game ended up being an 11-point victory for the Orange at that point. What's your pick on this game, David?
Syracuse. I mean, I've actually been really, really impressed with Villanova. I mean, they're ranked 8th. I think they're well-deserving of it and maybe even as good as that ranking. But, I mean, they go into Syracuse and win. I just don't know. Because of the shooting, because of the matchups, I know that there's a large degree of familiarity there, and that kind of cancels a lot of things out. But I just think Syracuse is better.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like Villanova. I think Villanova is a step below. I mean, Syracuse was my national championship pick, and I'm not completely sold on them. But frankly, you look at the way that most of the teams in the country have played so far this year. They've been one of the few that's been really consistent all the way through. I mean, them and Arizona, I've really been impressed by consistently.
Yeah, and you have to keep – I mean, to put this in context, if Nova were to get this win, it would probably be one of the two or three biggest wins of the year that anybody had as far as it being on the road against Syracuse. So what I'm saying is that I don't think Villanova will be able to win the biggest road game of the year.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Couple other games real quick, guys, on Saturday. There's really nothing on Sunday, but a couple other games on Saturday of note. I mentioned this earlier, but Missouri travels to NC State. I mean, this is a game Missouri needs to win just to get a good win on their resume away from home. For NC State, I mean, this is a team that's kind of flown under the radar. Losing at home to North Carolina Central will do that to you. But they did have a nice win on the road versus Tennessee. If they pick up this win versus Missouri, that's two good and out-of-conference victories, which probably cancels the bad out-of-conference loss. And Maybe they do a little bit of damage in the in a weakened ACC. I mean, it's at least a possibility. Any thoughts on that game from either of you?
Yeah, I mentioned this actually in a phone conversation today to David. Speaking about these home court heroes that Missouri has become. This isn't a conference game, but this is an interesting stat. You know, dating back to like 2000 in conference games, whatever odds makers, Vegas odds makers adjust for home court advantage in road games. Missouri is 15 games under 500 in conference against the spread in true road games. And, I know this isn't a conference game, but it just goes to show how bad they've been on the road. And I just think until Missouri proves that they can go on the road and win a game like this, I'm going to go with NC State. And it's not, really much credit to NC State because I don't think they're a very good team. But I want to see Missouri actually go and beat these teams before I'll believe it.
This is Missouri's first true road game. When Missouri has to pack a suitcase, they are terrible. They really need to win this game. If for no other reason, they need David Griggs off their back. Because, years, I've been talking about how Mizzou can't win on their own.
That is absolute. That's the first thing that's on their mind right now, I guarantee.
It is, yes.
One more game to talk about before we let go, and this isn't really, I'm not expecting this to be a good game per se, but speaking of home court heroes, UCLA hosting Alabama. Is this Anthony Grant's last year at Alabama, David? I mean, their best win so far this season is a home game against Texas Tech. They've lost to South Florida. They lost to Xavier and Wichita State. That's not terrible, but both those games were at home. They don't look like they're going to make much work for them this season. They've been mediocre on both sides of the ball. It seems like things just aren't working out as far as Anthony Grant's concerned. One tournament appearance in 5 years looks like that's going to continue this year.
Right.
It's odd that he hasn't been able to get this thing going at Alabama more.
It really is. I don't think this is his last year. I think that next year could be if he doesn't do any better, but I don't understand it either. Like, he's had two decent years, one where they almost made the tournament and one where they did, and I think they went out in the first round this year. Alabama is patient with basketball, but they're still pretty – they really want that to be better than what it is, and – I don't know. I don't think this is his last year, but next year could be. I don't understand why he can't seem to get it going. He has unlimited resources. They've thrown all kinds of money into it. I mean, contrary to what most people think, Alabama will support winning basketball in a big way. The year they made the tournament and the year before they almost did, they were sold out all through conference play. There was a lot of energy around that. It's front page news. The only difference is, basketball in Alabama is like a restaurant. People love it when the food's good, and when the food's terrible, people just don't go and they don't complain. Unlike football, which is a religion, where they love it when it's good, and when it's bad, everybody's out in the street with pitchforks.
Right.
So because of that, I think he's got one more year, but that's it.
Yeah.
Because they want that program to win.
And Kyle, let me round over to the other team involved in this game, UCLA. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of detritus from the Ben Howland era that's being picked up here. It's been a pretty good year so far for Steve Alford and this team. I mean, they look pretty good on offense. Their defense is just an abomination. And that really showed in that second half against Duke. And they didn't look that great against Missouri. They really don't have a whole lot of great wins so far. But they have a chance to go into Pac-12 play 11-2. And I got to think that's better than most people were expecting for this UCLA squad.
It's a little better than I was expecting. I mean, they've certainly got some offensive talent. They play a lot of street ball, but they can score. But like you said, I mean, they're just not a very good defensive team. They're not a very physical team. More of a finesse team at this point. I mean, they've got the athletes. If you get them in, if you try to get them into a run game, you might come out on the losing end. But if you get a sound half court game, you got a chance of beating this club. And I think that's I think fortunately for them, there's not a lot of slow-it-down teams in the Pac-12, but it could hurt them late in the season.
Yeah. So, should be interesting. That game itself might not be interesting, but it will be curious to see how this week plays out. Obviously, we've got some unknown games that are going to pop up in Diamond Head and a couple other places. So, keep vigilant on that and enjoy the break as it goes along. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, as always, and we'll have one more of these before the year ends, but I hope you both have a pleasant Christmas week, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again same time next week, I guess.
Same time, same
yes.
channel.
Yes, same time, absolutely. Same channel.
Anyway, for David Griggs and for Kyle Lamb and for Lito Vecchio, who couldn't make it tonight, and for all you folks that have tuned in and watched, I'm Galen Clavio. Thanks for joining us on the Bracket Racket. Be sure to join us throughout the course of the college basketball season. Tournament right around the corner. We'll have our conference predictions next week. We'll have our first brackets popping up on the site here in no time. So be sure to check us out at hoopshd.com. Catch you folks on the flip side. So long, everybody.